Welcome to another episode of Congo Kids Life Stories, where I share my experiences of growing up in the Congo in Central Africa. My hope is you find knowledge, entertainment, information, and insight of another culture and a new perspective of the Congolese people and Africa. Welcome back to the series called The Boarding School Dilemma, Balancing Mission and Family, about the challenge of being called to serve overseas in mission work and having to send your children away to a boarding school. A complex issue indeed, as you have determined, if you've listened to the first two episodes. This is episode 3 in a 5-part series. As a brief recap, in the first episode, I discussed the long road to even tackle this topic. I was advised not to do it and knew it was controversial, filled with mixed memories, buried hurts, guilt, angst, and landmines. But others encouraged me to pursue it, so I did. I was surprised as I dove into this that so many kids didn't want to revisit their time at the Ubangi Academy, or UBOC, our boarding school in Congo. I reached out via email, text, and phone to quite a few fellow dorm attendees, and more than expected, didn't respond. I also sent out about 100 surveys to both parents that sent their kids to UBOC and to fellow dorm attendees to get their feedback and input about the experience. I was surprised at how few folks responded, both parents and kids alike. Quite a few parents didn't want to answer my questions on my survey, so didn't respond either. I will admit they were tough questions, which would cause some honest soul searching. I also discovered that many of my peers went to counseling as they became young adults to help understand the abandonment, loneliness, and the rationalization of how their parents put mission work ahead of their child's emotional well-being. I also mentioned the main issue, which is a long-term emotional developmental impact of sending children away. The second episode explained the Ubangi Academy as an institution, describing the daily routine and schedule, and more importantly, the culture of the dorm family. I did use air quotes around the word family. For some, it might have felt that way, and for others, it didn't. The cultures of the boys' hall and girls' hall were also explained. I also tried to capture the dynamic of the child and the dorm parents and dorm helper regarding emotional connection and relationship. Young children, often only 7 or 8 years old, had to live apart from their parents in a dormitory setting for months at a time, having to adapt to a new environment, often without siblings or other support. Their emotional well-being was damaged in many cases and impacted their relationships with their parents and self-identity. With the foundation of how the dorm institution worked in part 2, I'm hoping it'll help the listener understand better the parents' point of view in this episode and the kids' point of view in the next episode. But before getting started, let me remind you of my goals and objectives of this series. The goal is to share the truth about the experiences so that dialogue, understanding, restoration, healing, and forgiveness can occur. This is for parents and kids alike. I also hope that the mission boards pay heed to these truths and any missionary families heading to the mission field involving a boarding school situation. Hopefully, this series will help them understand more clearly and mitigate the negatives and accentuate the positives. So how did parents approach this dilemma of following God's call to serve in missions while knowing that part of the price to pay for that was family separations for 36 weeks a year? This was the model the mission had set up to ensure proper education for the children so they would be able to re-enter American schools, culture, and society when they returned to North America. We know it was tough for the children, but it was also a challenge for the parents too. No parent wanted to have their child grow up in another location and not have direct influence on their lives, especially at a very young age. So having to choose serving God through the mission work, knowing their child or children would be away for so long, wasn't easy for the parents either. For missionaries overseas, ensuring their kids received a quality education in order to adapt well academically upon return to the States was very important. UBOC provided that, as mentioned in Episode 2, but it also provided personal growth and character to become functioning adults. Furthermore, development in a child's spiritual walk was another dimension that UBOC provided. One of the stated purposes of UBOC was as follows.
To promote intellectual maturity and to encourage development of Christian character in each student.
So how did UBOC do in this regard? Jim Snyder, a parent that sent his children to UBOC and later became the dorm parents with his wife Ruth, gives his view on this.
Yeah, as far as education, it was spectacular. There's also like the side perks of learning an instrument and playing the piano with Aunt Eileen and doing stuff like that. But socially, I think they did really well. I was thinking about the reality of kids in the States versus kids in a dorm setting where you have a sequestered group of friends, right? And you get virtually no reprieve from those friends. And you can either thrive in that or not. And I think in the context that we had, especially with a group of kids that were there at the time, that both of the boys did quite well. And Ben in particular had a tight-knit group that supported and encouraged each other.
This is supported by Kim Cohn, a UBOC attendee and later a parent that sent his kids to UBOC.
Well, for both me and for my children, I would say on the dimension of education that it was excellent. College was fairly easy for all of us because of the good preparation of the Ubangi Academy. I think there was good growth in terms of personal character as well. And our own children are all functioning well as adults. In the dimension of spiritual growth, by God's grace, that has turned out well also, and we're thankful.
Of the 9 surveys I received from parents that sent their kids to UBOC, all said education, personal growth, character building, and the spiritual dimension were good or excellent. Not one person noted anything negative on these items, and all my interviewees echoed this. So was the UBOC/dorm model an attempt to create a surrogate family for the children? And what may have influenced that for better or worse? Here is Jim Snyder's answer to that question.
In name, yes, they did create a surrogate family. In other words, you've got the dorm parents, you kind of call the other kids your brothers and sisters and stuff like that. But in reality, and I think this is a hard piece here for me because I know it was different before we went to the dorm, but so much of my reflections are obviously tainted by the fact that we were dorm parents. And one thing that we made real clear to the kid was that we are not your mom and dad. And we know that. And so those issues of like feeling homesick versus and missing your mom and dad and realizing that we're not the mom and dad, is okay to be homesick. And so, yeah, it does have kind of a quasi sense of family, but I know for a fact that that could probably play with some of the thoughts of kids when they assume, well, this is my brother and sister, well, I really don't like them. Or these are my dorm parents, and they're telling me to do something that my parents would never tell me to do. Does it become a surrogate family, maybe a temporary family or temporary reality? But one thing I'm pretty sure that we would have told our kids this as well, that these are not your parents, so you need to respect them even more than you respect us. And you know, it's like, these are not your brothers and sisters, but you do need to get along with them. And that's part of life.
Here are thoughts from an anonymous parent.
I know they succeeded to the best of their ability. I mean, how can you parent 50 kids giving them one-on-one individual care? I think they probably did as good as they thought they could.
It must be noted that the regular dorm parents rotated periodically due to furloughs, etc., And in the 1980s and 1990s, the change in dorm parents, where new folks to the mission field were assigned to the role, and that led to less stability. Several folks mentioned that some dorm parents did a good job and others did not, and just weren't cut out for the task. Since Jim and Ruth Snyder were unique in that they both sent their kids away, then decided to assume the role of dorm parents, I asked Jim how he helped his children with the paradigm shift of being at UBOC, but having their real parents as dorm parents.
We were upfront with our kids about the realities of there being just five of the 30 that we needed to care for. And we chose to appreciate the benefits of being together rather than being a part of the frustration of lack of attention or interaction we might have. We needed to remind them from time to time that we'd be together on a given weekend or even during the breaks. There was a lot of time during those breaks, and more than we'd ever had before, to spend time together as a family. I might add that it was really a healthy thing for them to see us through the eyes of the other kids. Too often children don't have that opportunity to hear other kids talk about their parents and realize what they have. We were very intentional about not playing favorites, and I don't think any of the kids in the dorm felt like we did.
While being called to serve God in Africa is a noble endeavor, for those with little children, especially young children, the day comes when it's time to send little Johnny or Susie away for 8 to 10 weeks at a time. And this is often with no contact save for letters. Though I can attest that it was tougher for the child since I was a child shipped off to UBOC, it was a struggle for the parents. This is where the rubber meets the road, and the romance, nobility, and altruism of being foreign missionaries clashes with the reality of breaking up one's family for 36 weeks a year. This is where a parent hopes, trusts, and prays that their child will survive and thrive while in the care of the dorm parents and the UBOC institutions. Parents would try to prepare their child for the time to go to the dorm. After my time there in the 1970s, they set up tours for the incoming kids to get familiar with the dorm in UBOC so that it would not be a total surprise. Ruth and Brad Hill initially were incredibly stressed about sending their daughter to UBOC and contemplated returning to the U.S. when their kids reached that age or to pursue homeschooling. However, as their daughter was exposed to UBOC over the years, she started getting excited about going. This is Ruth sharing about how they prepared themselves and their daughter.
We interviewed missionary kids, especially adult ones, and we asked, what did your parents do that helped you? What advice do you have for us to make it work for our Rachel? And one comment really stuck with us. Quote, I thought my parents were glad when I returned to the dorm so they could get back to their work. End quote. Woo. So the best advice we got was to not hide how painful it was on us to let them go. So I didn't hide my tears when the hard goodbye had to be made. And both girls learned to ask as the MAF plane was being loaded, are you crying yet, Mom? They didn't see the tears shed so many times after they were gone, setting just two places at the table instead of four, beds that never needed to be changed, no fun time, bedtime routines, etc. But they knew they were deeply, deeply missed.
Kim shares what he and his wife Jan did.
Well, as I've already intimated, we talked to them about it. We also tried to help them make friends before starting boarding school. We would try to create situations where they could encounter some of the children that they would be with in boarding school, so that they would look forward to seeing them and being with them. And then we frankly shared some of our own experiences with boarding.
Now let's flip the roles a bit and hear from Kim, who also was a UBOC attendee, as he could identify with his children.
The goodbyes were painful all around. In other words, it was painful for me when I was sending my own kids away. It was painful for my parents when they sent me away. In our family, we tend to be kind of open, kind of transparent, and we tend to be wired kind of emotionally. And so my father shed tears every time he said goodbye to me clear through 12th grade. And that helped me to know that it wasn't easy for him either, which in turn, I think, helped me to accept the circumstances better. And I'm wired just like him. I cried, I believe, every time I sent my own children away. And we were able to talk about the pain openly.
But even with preparation, for a young child especially, the reality of sending a son or daughter away yields different results and angst for the parents. Jim explains.
We struggled. It was hard. We did not like doing it. We felt like it was probably the best scholastic option for them. Ruth does not like to homeschool. And we knew that the boys would have a difficult time, and there were times, you know, where they cried and missed home. And the dorm parents did a lot to try to, just as we did later on, to try to remedy that, you know, from their side of what was happening. But yeah, it's not easy as a parent. I often recall sitting down at our son's birthday. It was in January, and both of us at supper time, Ruth and me, looking at each other and crying because the birthday boy wasn't there, you know. And you do the phony thing where you're talking to him and singing happy birthday to him and stuff, and then you get off of that and you feel even worse. So it was hard. And I don't know that we cried ourselves to sleep, but we cried often.
Dr. Tom Cairns, in his survey, noted that kids that attended the dorm came to understand farewells in a different way, something that children in the U.S. don't experience. This is a valid point and is so true, as parents and children needed to learn how to say goodbye many times during the growing up years. Parents hope to raise their children with their values, morals, religion, and character. But can a missionary that sends their child off for their schooling have that impact and influence when the child spends so much time in a dorm setting? How does a parent reconcile not being present for so much time of their child's development and trust in the care of the UBOC institution?
Yeah, let me jump around a little bit to answer that. I think a lot of it depends on the quality of the dorm parents. I mentioned that in the Central African Republic, in the missionary children's school that I started going to in first grade, I had a dorm mother with psychological problems. And I think it did affect me. I've often wondered if my somewhat anti-authoritarian tendencies as an adult didn't come from that experience. In other words, an adult let me down, didn't live up to my trust, and I think that could have created a certain rebellion within me. On the other hand, when the dorm parents and the teachers were good, they were able to contribute things to our children's lives that we couldn't. I gave an illustration of my own boarding experience. My father was extremely brilliant, and he could make good decisions on the fly. Well, I didn't inherit his brilliance, but I did learn from him to make decisions without much planning. And fortunately, Bob Peterson, whom I think you know well, was extremely good about meticulously planning everything that he did. And I saw that example. And as a result, I learned to become a better planner than what I would have been if I had just been raised by my own biological parents.
Several of the surveys noted that there were regrets for not being part of their kids growing up, sporting events, school events, etc. So yes, there were many memories that were missed for parents.
In general, we drove a lot of very rough miles in order to be to as many of their school events as possible. That'd be like the school play, graduation, baptisms, and so forth. One set of dorm parents that our children had along the way tended to lay guilt trips on them, and it was upsetting to the boys. And we took that seriously. We spent a lot of time listening to them and trying to come alongside of them in that problem and deal with it as best we knew how.
I asked Jim if he and Ruth made any conscious decisions on how to be better dorm parents based on the feedback they'd gotten from their children.
Oh, good question. One thing that I've really worked at doing was making our devotions like super fun. And we had different ones every night, and there was something else that we rarely did the same thing twice. And so one thing that I just recently heard from Carl Noren, who is one of the kids that are in the dorm. He said, "Thank you, Uncle Jim, for making devotions fun." It was probably the first time that I talked to Carl since UBOC. And it's funny that he remembered just that. But that's cool. I mean, that's encouraging. The one thing that Ruth never did is make the kids eat things they didn't like. And we knew for a fact that Sam had been set down on multiple occasions trying to eat pondu, and he just really doesn't like pondu. Ruth made sure that the kids were eating well and that not forced to eat the things that they didn't like to eat.
As mentioned, between the interviews and surveys returned by parents, the takeaway of the UBOC experience is as follows. Their children fared well in the area of education, personal growth, and development into adults, and all felt their child did well in spiritual growth. Many parents noted this concept in their surveys, and Ruth Hill captured how she and Brad approached this.
We found God faithful to equip us to fulfill His calling, and that included the strength to be separated from our children and to let them be cared for by others during those school terms. Through His guidance on how to do that best, we went forward, always ready to make drastic changes if the need became evident.
With one's children growing up in a dorm environment, the parents had to trust the UBOC institution and fellow dorm mates and dorm parents to ensure their child's emotional needs and upbringing were met in a Christian and safe environment. How did the parents feel the dorm structure fared in this regard? Anonymous shares.
So, of course, we do have regrets, but would we change anything if we knew what we know now? We'd probably have been more apt to ask the kids specific questions, maybe to the dorm parents or dorm helper or whoever. Maybe we could have been more aware of all kinds of abuse, emotional, sexual, everything, whatever. Our daughter did say, I think I mentioned to you, she suffered considerable emotional abuse because she was little for her age. Everyone thought she was in a lower grade than what she really was.
But Kim notes a flashback to when he was a kid at UBOC, so was aware of the culture that his children were involved in.
No, I'm not aware of any problems that damaged them in any significant way. I was big for my age, but these big boys were quite a bit bigger, and they really took it out on my height at different times. However, I took that as kind of normal behavior for boys, and I didn't retain any bitterness to speak of over it.
So was the dorm a surrogate family for the children? The survey responses were generally positive in thinking the dorm created a surrogate family. Most parents feel that their children fared well overall in the dorm environment. Tom Cairns believes his children appreciated the dorm parents as surrogate parents and the sibling relationships with other kids. Pete Ekstrand noted that his young daughter felt close to the dorm parents who sought to create a family atmosphere as best they could with that many kids. Rachel Faulkner Olson suggested having separate dorms for younger kids and older kids. That's an idea I'd not considered. And many wished the distances weren't so far, so they could have visited more. The surveys that were returned generally concur that the attempt was there to create a, quote, family, unquote, and that they felt it achieved that. However, several parent surveys noted that some of their children flourished better than others. The other comment of note was that some dorm parents did better than others with making their children feel like the dorm was a family. So while the infrastructure of the dorm was well established and accepted and generally worked, some children really never felt connected, largely in part due to the tone set by the dorm parents as reported by their parents. Sadly, in these cases, the real parents couldn't do much to address their child's issues with their child being so far away. Most parents shared that they did miss their children and were concerned for their well-being and upbringing. Dr. Tom Cairns noted that he and Annette were concerned that being at the dorm could have negative consequences then and in the long term. However, he and Annette bathed their kids in prayer daily, constantly, for protection against such outcomes. The role of prayer for the children on the part of the parents should be recognized as critical for the outcomes. Many parents scheduled midterm visits to UBOC or even flew their kids home for long weekends, so that helped break up the long times apart. But being gone for 8 to 10 weeks at a time meant that vacation time was precious indeed for kids and parents alike. The surveys noted that parents did work hard in most cases to make the vacation times as special as possible. Trips, special events, special food, and going to Lake Quata were on the agenda. And many parents would schedule their work to allow for maximum time with the kids during vacations. Kim Cohn shares what he did once.
So I'll go back to my own boarding experience. I don't think my parents' generation were particularly good at this. I think in general, they placed a very high value on getting the tasks done. And so they tended to be a bit workaholics. But nevertheless, they tried and they would do things like take us on picnics to a river in the bush. Jan's parents did probably a better job in that they arranged trips through Europe and Egypt, et cetera, coming and going and made a lot of memories for their children. With our own kids, we were very deliberate about setting aside as many ministry responsibilities as possible during the children's 3 short vacations. In some cases, this got us into trouble with the National Church, which felt that church business meetings were more important than kicking soccer balls around with kids. Our children have expressed appreciation to us for trying our best to make them the priority during vacations. On one occasion, even though I was regarded as being a missionary pastor, after my son had failed to connect on some big game on Saturday, I felt the time was so precious, he was going to go back to school right away. And so I took him hunting again on Easter Sunday. And that probably fueled a lot of gossip on the part of a lot of people. But my son ended up getting the game that he was after, and it made for probably one of the most memorable moments in his life.
Anonymous shares.
I think for my part of it, I tried to be home more when the kids were home. And we did spend a lot of Saturdays together as a family and spent time at Lake Quata.
And I remember the girls did a lot more cooking when they were home because we enjoyed doing that together.
The other thing, too, is trips the kids made during their breaks. Motorcycle trips. They'd make arrangements with a bunch of the other mission stations and they'd send fuel up and they'd go. One year they went to Kala, Limbenge, all the way over to Goyongo, and made the whole circuit on motorcycles.
Jim and Ruth also made considerable efforts to connect with their kids.
I think we had, phony times that we set up where we were communicating with our kids somewhat frequently. It wasn't like once a week or anything, maybe every other week or something. And we did try to visit at least once, you know, during between breaks. So there was some communication going on. I don't recall offhand. And truthfully, I think Ruth asked Sam, you know, just recently if there were any regrets or frustrations or disappointments in having gone to UBOC, and he couldn't remember anything. So we tried to be as real as we could with the boys, just to let them know that this is not going to be a lot of fun all the time. And in fact, it's going to hurt sometimes being away from mom and dad and family, and mom's cooking and what's comfortable. Mm-hmm. But we tried to be up as upfront with them as possible and not sugarcoat it.
So while we in Congo were relegated to short vacations to be with our nuclear families, Kim further shares an interesting point for us all to reflect on about parenting and family time in general.
I think there is a difference between time viewed quantitatively and time viewed qualitatively. Since coming back to the States, I've seen children that live under the same roof as their parents, but they have no meaningful communication with their parents. They pass like ships in the night, and although they're chalking up a lot of hours under the same roof, they aren't meaningful hours. They aren't hours when they can have heart-to-heart conversations. And I think there was something about absence making our hearts grow fonder, that in the boarding context, even though we had less time together, we had much better quality time together. And so I think that tended to compensate for the separation of the boarding experience.
Many of the questions posed and answered so far have delved into the potential negative aspects of the dorm experience. From a parent's point of view, what were the positive impacts of the school and dorm institution on their children? Here is how many parents felt the dorm benefited their children. An anonymous parent states the following.
Oh, for sure. And especially for the academics and education. Because I don't know if you recall, the PSAT test, the class that my child was in, had several in the top 1 percentile, which is pretty incredible for a school the size of UBOC. So I think, academically, they did incredibly well.
Jim Snyder shares this dimension.
Partly, I think it was because of the kids' involvement at UBOC, but mostly missionary kids in general are able to carry on a conversation, and an intelligent conversation, with an adult. And that's a rarity among kids, even graduates from high school. It's not common, but it's a very common thing among the missionary community to have kids interact with adults and be able to enjoy it. Very positive thing. It demonstrates maturity. And to that extent, I think too, not that the two are identical, but we saw the kids mature in their faith a great deal when we were dorm parents, and not every solution was resolved by going and sitting and reading the Bible. But, you know, it was I think by and large, the kids were given the opportunity, and many grabbed hold of growing in their faith.
Dr. Tim and Ann Wester both went to UBOC, then sent their children there. Tim stated in his survey that growing up in the dorm created independent kids. He also noted that this might be why dorm kids might have less contact with their parents now that they are adults. Kim Cohn adds to this.
Well, we weren't age graded that strictly at the Ubangi Academy. And so in the nature of things, we had to develop an ability to converse easily with adults, you know, to move in circles with adults, to get along with them well as with children that were younger than what we are. And so we did develop an ease in conversing with adults, along with good academic habits, self-sufficiency, and a certain spiritual depth.
He also feels that
We feel very strongly that our children were enriched by having additional parents that often had gifting that we lacked. And therefore, there were areas where we couldn't help our children, but they were able to help our children. And so we think that they benefited greatly by having additional fathers and mothers.
One of the things I've learned in the preparation of this series is that many parents and children really haven't talked about the dorm experience. I know for me, discussions about my experience at the dorm have not been talked about much. In fact, I've talked to my parents more in the past few months than I ever have. I think Jim's comment is typical for most parents.
To my knowledge, has never been an issue. But probably in the next couple of days, I'll probably ask each of them individually if it was ever a problem. I don't fear that question. I wouldn't hesitate to ask it, especially if I, in any just kind of loose conversation, anything came up, and nothing ever has.
So the big question that we are all hoping to get answered in this episode is this. Did parents reconcile serving God at the expense of separating their families, and do they know the true cost of this? At the time, did being God's missionary to the Congolese trump the cost to their families, and especially their very young children, due to having to send them to a dorm setting? Equally important, how many parents actually know the emotional cost to their children? Hopefully, what we've heard so far and will hear in the next few minutes of this episode will answer that and help us children, the kids that went to UBOC, understand how and why parents did what they did with the model that our respective mission boards set up for us. But let's step back, zoom out, and look at this from a much higher level. Missionaries are called to serve God and to spread the gospel to win against sin and evil. It's a battle. And sacrifices are to be made when considering the task.
I think, and this is just going to be my personal view at this point, but I think that in many ways, missionary work is an attempt to storm the strongholds of Satan. In other words, it's like warfare. And in warfare, men are sent away from their families for months or even years in order to protect them and in order to protect their countries. The sacrifice is justified on the basis of what is at stake. In other words, drastic times call for drastic measures. When James Gribble first invaded Satan's stronghold in the Central African Republic, he sent his child back to the States definitively when she was only 6 years old, as I recall the story. It was a pioneering phase and drastic measures were called for. Such drastic measures were not needed in the second phase. By then, most mission agencies had school teachers on the field to teach the children of missionaries. Boarding, however, was still needed and often required by mission bylaws. In other words, many of those parents didn't have a choice at that time. They were required to send their children to the boarding school. By the third phase, homeschooling and satellite internet schooling, etc., created an environment in which parents could be given a choice, boarding, homeschooling, or internet schooling. And perhaps we're entering a fourth phase now in which few missionaries live in remote areas anymore. Many live in their own countries or in the capital cities of foreign countries, and from there they work remotely or they travel periodically to their job sites. But either way, the children do not have to board. There are advantages to this. However, there are some disadvantages. Fewer and fewer of the children today really learn foreign languages and cultures. And so they're gaining time with their parents, which I wouldn't minimize in any way, but they're also losing the opportunity to really intimately get to know another culture and another way of life.
I love what Kim just stated there. It really helps me, a dorm kid, understand more clearly the big picture of what my parents were doing. The dorm setting was one of the prices to pay for both the parents and for us kids for the benefit of a bigger cause. Kim, having been both a kid in a dorm setting and then sending his kids away, offers this counsel for all to consider when faced with this dilemma.
Overall, our personal experiences with boarding are positive. Nevertheless, I would caution parents anticipating boarding their children on three matters. First of all, check out the prospective dorm parents carefully. If there are doubts, seek an alternative way to care for the children's schooling. Secondly, try to get the children to speak openly about their boarding experience. Listen to them carefully. Listen for little clues that things aren't going quite right. If there are problems, deal with them expeditiously. Thirdly, serious research indicates that boys probably shouldn't be boarded before third grade. And maybe I'll add a fourth point, if you'll bear with me. Don't hide your own grief from the children. They will be able to handle their own grief better if they know that you are sharing it with them.
So to summarize from the interviewees and surveys that were returned, the general consensus that it was tough for parents to send their kids away, and most parents made the effort to see their kids midterm when possible and tried to make vacations special and maximize quality time with the family. Furthermore, parents knew this was one of the costs of serving in Congo, but were grateful for UBOC. It brought structure, independence, excellent academics, and for most kids, a strong spiritual foundation. But in some circumstances, parents had to deal with children that didn't adapt well. Some kids struggled academically and socially and experienced emotional and physical abuse that the parents were aware of. Unfortunately, in other cases, the parents weren't made aware after the damage was done until a much later date. No doubt that was hard for the parents to handle from afar. And I'm aware of many children that experienced brutal emotional and physical trauma. Many have gone to counseling as adults. Some have left the Christian faith. And I know of specific cases of sexual abuse that occurred, which has haunted the children and the parents to this day. But UBOC was the model that was created to meet the educational needs of the missionary kids, and overall, the parents that have participated in this episode feel that UBOC did a pretty good job under the circumstances. Note, this is the parents' viewpoint, which is for other parents and us kids that attended to understand and appreciate better how many parents came to terms with the situation. I think many parents knew, deep down, about their kids' struggles, especially when very young, but hoped and prayed and assumed all was well and would turn out okay, barring a major issue. Many, too, probably felt that getting a great education and independence and those other, quote, positives, unquote, outweighed the negatives of less emotional connection to the parents as growing up under their roof. And many knew that it was a price to pay to serve God in the Congo. My takeaway is that parents are not talking to their kids years later because they don't want to disrupt that rationalization now in their golden years. Or they assume their kids turned out okay. Maybe this is why many parents never really talked about it or asked us kids about it. Many parents, including my own, believe their children turned out fine. For my family, is it because we three boys are all financially stable, still married to the same woman, raise children, pay our taxes, aren't in trouble with the law, or dealing with substance abuse problems? So from outside appearances, we turned out, quote, fine, unquote. I would have wanted my parents' support when I needed it. And I would have liked to have been asked about my struggles, my hurts, my experiences, and forced independence at a very young age. And had a dialogue occurred, I would have wanted to understand better why my parents sent me away and how they too struggled with the separation. Instead, it only became a topic of discussion when I told my folks I was going to do this podcast series, 54 years after I left for UBOC for the first time in 1970. Here is a very interesting point of view on the whole mission effort and the dorm paradigm. My wife and I recently hosted Congolese friends of ours, Pastor Nubako Selenga and his wife Claudine, for 6 days. They are good friends of ours, and Pastor Selenga was on my dad's gospel and leadership team in the 1980s while in high school. He later went on to seminary, served as a pastor, and was even president of the local Congolese denomination for 8 years. So he is dialed in to the missionary system and model in Congo. One evening, after dinner, and our fresh apple pie dessert, with vanilla ice cream, of course, sitting around the table, I brought up the topic of this podcast series. I shared the outline, challenges for the children, issues I'd heard in my preparation for this series, and my goal of better understanding and improving dialogue between parents and children. After listening to me and processing the topic and subject matter and where I was going with it, he looked rather surprised, and I could tell he was searching for how to process this. He then said how he, a pastor, would often apologize to his family for the time away, as his church's needs of providing care, comfort, visitation, counseling, and preparing for sermons often became a priority, and he'd be out of balance with his family and 6 children. I knew this was important to him as I watched his body language while he turned and faced his wife while responding. So he was very conscious of this issue and worked hard to spend time with his wife and children in spite of the needs of his congregation. Not an easy task. So when he heard me talking about being shipped to Yubok, the homesickness, forced independence at too young of an age, getting beat up, and all that stuff, he was shocked. He had no idea we missionary kids had those issues. Then his face became sad, as I could tell he was pained by what he'd heard. He was clearly moved to hear about my struggles at the dorm and growing up away from my parents. This was a totally new thing he'd never thought about. So he then said he had a newfound appreciation and respect for us kids and what we gave up and experienced in order for our parents to be in Congo serving the Congolese. He had never considered the children and had only focused on the good that our parents were doing for the people and the church. I could tell this new bit of knowledge had impacted him tremendously. His perception of the entire mission model, of which he was very familiar, was focused on the parents' role to serve the Congolese, and as such, he'd never even considered the impact on the kids vis-a-vis their dorm experience. He then said he would pray for me and all the kids and ask God to bless us for what we gave up in our youth, as those sacrifices had benefited him and his fellow Congolese. And now he understood so much better the true cost. He'd never considered the children's role in the mission work, only our parents. In fact, he said that I needed to have this podcast series translated into French so the Congolese church there could hear and understand this dimension of the missionary presence, since this was such an important item. In the next episode, I will share the kids' perspective. I interview several kids that were sent away and how that affected their family and the long-term impact it had on their relationship. Some went when they were very young, and others started attending in junior high. I also ask the tough questions and seek honest answers as to this reconciliation and justification. I also will share from the responses to these questions from the surveys that kids submitted, so you will hear directly from kids about their struggles and coping. There are also many positives that we kids gained by attending Yubok, including a great education, wonderful friends, independence, and other life character traits. Knowing that this series may trigger some buried hurts and memories for Yubok attendees, I want to remind the listener that resources and help are available. The Free Church Mission Board, as well as the Covenant Mission Board, have committed to providing resources for counseling for those that choose to seek it. This offer is to help them work through their childhood issues brought on by being sent to UBOC. I applaud both mission boards for acknowledging this responsibility and taking ownership and accountability in this way. Serving God on the mission field with the dilemma of balancing mission work, boarding school, and family is very complicated indeed. This episode from the parents' perspective clarified their struggles, which hopefully will bring understanding to other parents and their kids. No doubt, many parents might not know how their child fared during their school years, and even now, decades later, probably don't know how the dorm experience impacted their child. Why? Because many parents and kids have never talked about it. So my message and request is this. Parents, kids, talk about it. Talk about it. Listen and learn about what each side went through to reach understanding and healing in your relationship. I want to thank my four advisors / consultants that are helping me with my script to ensure the message and content is solely for the benefit of creating dialogue, understanding, healing, and restoration of relationships where needed. That is the ultimate goal of the series, and you all have been terrific in this regard. I also want to thank Kim Cohn, Jim Snyder, and Anonymous for allowing me to interview them and for sharing their viewpoints for this episode. Also, thanks to the following for sending in surveys to answer my questions and provide a broader view of these issues. Pete and Cindy Ekstrand, Ruth Hill, Anonymous One, Tom Cairns, Tim Wester, Rachel Faulkner Olson, Kim Cohn, Anonymous Two, and Anonymous Number Three. I want the listener to have many points of view on this topic, and the survey contributions were excellent. Thank you for listening to part three of this series to understand the parents' struggle of sending their kids away and how they rationalized it, found peace, and tried to accommodate that reality to mitigate the impact. I hope you continue with me on this journey of unpacking more of this issue in the next episode, part four of this series titled The Boarding School Dilemma, Balancing Mission and Family, The Kids' Viewpoint. So that concludes this episode. I hope you enjoyed it and will listen again. Other podcasts and blog articles on a variety of topics can be found at congokid.net. In addition, Congo Kids' life stories are also posted on Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. I'm Jeff Eales, a.k.a. Congo Kid, your humble host. Until next time, I will send you off with a farewell in Lingala. Baninga nangai, tikalamalamu. My friends, stay well.